Oh, boy. My name is, hello? Y'all, hey. Hey. What, are they giving away money in here or something? What's going on? My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. And it's a great privilege to be here with you guys, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you a little bit about what's going on. I know this is theoretically the ninth week, so theoretically we're like on step nine. Who knows? I actually listened to the recording of what we did last week. I sort of covered 8 and 9 last week, but we'll see what's going on. I have a couple things I want to talk about and see how this works out. I noticed there's some people who were at B'nai Torah last night. I'm doing a couple of months on you guys are gluttons for punishment. I might go over some of that stuff, some of that James 1 stuff. I really sort of, even though it's a step series, I sort of, in my latter years, because my brain cells are leaving me, I don't know too much. Should have caught me when I had 3 years. I've been sort of meshing in more about emotional sobriety. You know, Bill Wilson, when he was talking about the next frontier, he said the next frontier is something called emotional sobriety. Not physical sobriety, but emotional sobriety. I don't know whether you've noticed that I've been to thousands of AA meetings. And nobody's drinking. And so we must be working on something else. They must be coming back for other reasons. And the problem is not so much the drink. The drink sort of takes care of itself. The problem is what happens after we stop drinking. That's when the real alcoholism. That's when the isms come in. So that's what I sort of like to talk about. I want to read a couple of things. I got this. This brand new, I've got the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. If any of you are actually interested in seriously getting involved with, you know, this deal, and this is just, this is all my opinion, you understand that, so. You can be wrong if you want to, you can disagree. But in any event, if anybody wants seriously to get involved, I'd suggest you get a hold of the book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. This is a book that essentially, it's a little bit more than that, goes through in detail what AA was about and what they were doing between 1935 and 1939. Now, it goes past 1939, past the writing of the big book, because for a long time in AA sort of like remained the same even after the big book, because the old timers, the people who were around, were doing what they were continuing to do between 1935 and 1939. And you may want to actually get into that deal. Okay, I didn't get into it, you know, and it's okay until maybe I had 10 or 15 years sobriety, because I wanted more. I wanted more, you know. There's a story in the big book about Bill Dotson, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, and he says, I wanted more. I knew there was something more. If you're involved in this deal and you're sober a year or two or three or five or 10 or 6 months or 3 days, and you're sober, you're physically sober, you can look around you and you can look at different speakers and different people, and you know there's something more. You know there's something you still just haven't got yet. Because you can see people who have 10, 15, and you know, that have time, and you know that they're sober physically, and you know that you're sober, but you know you're battier than a bed bug, you know what I mean? And they seem to have some sort of stability. And you understand somehow, even though, hey, we're alcoholics, we're sensitive. You know, I said, I'm sensitive. No, he says, great artists are sensitive. You're touchy. Even though we're sensitive, and nobody here is better than anybody else, we know that in this, there are leaders in AA. There are people other people look up to. That's why, look right on the traditions. It says, our leaders are trusted servants. The leaders seem to be the ones that are actually out there giving and serving and helping other people. So we know there's, you know, even though we're all basically the same, we're all alcoholics, nobody better than anybody else, we know that there are people, once they get in here, that have something to offer. They've gotten to some place more than just not drinking, you know, and some people want that deal, you know. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that stuff and what's happened to me over a period of time and read a few things to you. And so this book, I think, is essential, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. It's what specifically they were doing between 1935 and 1939. Now, for those of you who don't know the history of AA, it's important to know the history of AA. The program of recovery predates the writing of the big book. You understand that? In other words, alcoholics have been getting cured, you know, for thousands of years. This has been going on. This didn't just start with Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous is a wonderful thing. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, but listen, God didn't start operating in people's lives in 1939 when the big book was written. There was crap going on before then. There was stuff going on in 1934, in 1938, in 1937, in 1936, in 1935. There was stuff going on in, like, you know, 10 BC, you know what I mean? There were people getting sober for many, many years. Stuff was happening, you know, before, during, and after Alcoholics Anonymous. And in any event, so in this book, as you know, AA started in 1935 when Bill Wilson met Dr. Bob, and they both got sober. Bill Wilson was already sober. About 6 months, he met Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob got sober, and that's when AA started. Now, AA went on for 4 years after that. And then after 4 years, there were a little over 100 people that were sober. And if you read and then they wrote this book called The Big Book. You know, I mean, actually, Bill Wilson wrote it with the help of somebody else, with Sam Shoemaker. He had Ed Dowling helping him, two clergymen. You know, I know if you hang around the rooms, you'll think that we have nothing to do with religion, you know, but you know, listen, all I can tell you is we have a book that says, as we get sober, we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. You know, we don't put down organized. We begin to see where they're right, because Bill Wilson wrote this with the help and the assistance. They wanted to give him credit of, you know, a Roman Catholic clergyman, you know, Ed Dowling, a Jesuit priest, and Sam Shoemaker, who was with the Oxford Movement and things like that, and I think he was with Calvary in New York. So the bottom line is, now why is this important? This is something that happened. This is what they were doing between 1935. Why is it important what they were doing between 1935 and 1939? Now, there's a little saying in AA. It goes like this. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and of true happiness, he'll find none at all. Now, I suppose that it's possible that y'all are aware, especially based upon news reports now, that are coming out now, that there are people that have come to AA and done and put together many, many years of sobriety, maybe 20 years sobriety or more, 10 years, 15, 20 years sobriety or more. Maybe I've put together a life, maybe wealth, maybe fame. You know, maybe these are people that have respect of other people. I've gotten basically everything you could possibly squeeze out of this world. Squeeze out of this world. And plus they've had 10 or 15 or 20 years sobriety. And it is possible that those people end up disastrously either deceased or in big trouble in a big way. In other words, just because you're physically sober doesn't necessarily mean that you're happy or you're content or you've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence or experienced much of heaven or any of the stuff they're talking about, or in the promises. You know, we're on 8 and 9, that's around where the promise is supposed to happen, where you're supposed to know that new freedom and that new happiness, whatever the heck that is, you know, has something to do with losing fear of people and of economic insecurity, you know, being reborn. You know, it says God doing for us what we can do. It has something to do with that deal. So apparently, once you stop drinking, once you get rid of that that horrible thing, you know, it says right in the, I think, the foreword of first edition, it says, we are men and women who have recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. And we all know what the hopeless state of mind and body is, because y'all are alcoholics and I'm an alcoholic. So I know what the hopeless state of mind and body is. That's when you can't stop drinking. And that's a real problem. When you're drinking against your will, you know, not because you want to, but because you have to, or because you can't envision not drinking. You know, and if you're an alcoholic like me, I mean, if you suffer from the same kind of disease that I, maybe you suffer from a different form of alcoholism, but I suffered from the form of alcoholism where I looked you in the eye and I said, I need help. I was 31 years old, trial attorney, not a dumb guy, you know, all sorts of certificates and degrees and crap like that. You know, and my life was in ruination, and I was in ruination, and I look a guy in the eye and I say, you need help, I can't stop drinking. Now you try to explain that to some person on the street, that you can't stop drinking, they look at you like you're funny. I mean, that's the difference between us and other, you know, they say, what do you mean you can't stop drinking? I mean, I can't, now, with you guys, I don't have to go through a great, you know, the great thing about being an Alcoholics Anonymous is I don't have to go through a great deal of explanation about that, right? I mean, it would be kind of hard to explain to other people out there. Boy, wouldn't it be a bad thing if in order to be here, you'd have to somehow convince your mother and father or sister and aunt that you can't stop drinking? Because they don't believe it. They don't believe it at all. Nobody believes that. You know why? Because they can stop drinking. They don't even need to start drinking. They don't even know what you're talking about. To them, you're crazy. But you tell me you can't stop drinking, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I had a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And by the time I was 31 years old, my life was over and I couldn't stop drinking. Now, you know what the big book says in the foreword? It says, we're more than 100 men and women who have recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. Guess what? You guys have recovered from that. You don't have to worry about that anymore. You don't have to worry about that anymore. But you may have to be concerned about other stuff. You know, other stuff. You know, as I said, unless and until an alcoholic accepts alcoholism and all its consequences, you may have to be concerned with the consequences of being an alcoholic, what alcoholism really is. Because the drinking is just the symptom. If you're an alcoholic, you're going to drink, but the bottom line is that's not really the disease. The disease, guess what? You were an alcoholic before you started drinking. As a matter of fact, you drank alcohol in order to chase away the alcoholism. You know, that's why you would say things like, I needed a drink, or I got to have a drink, or let's go get a drink. That's why you drank. You drank because you couldn't stand being sober. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless. They're irritable. They're discontented. I don't care what words you want to put on it. Restless, irritable, discontented, bored. You know, you need this, you need that. Things aren't good. You know, you can have everything, but it's not enough. You can have the mansion. You can have, it's just not enough. You know, there's something always missing. You like always have to be on the move to get something else. Rest, and listen, we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. You know, that's the deal. You know, I mean, I need to drink because I can't stand who and what I am. And I don't know what that's all about. I don't know how that works, how to get out of that. I mean, I can stop drinking. How do you stop thinking? How do you stop feeling the way I feel? And so I was an alcoholic before I even started drinking. I was an alcoholic during the drinking. I'm an alcoholic after I stop drinking. You know what I mean? I'm still an alcoholic even today. I still suffer from alcoholism. And one of the consequences, guess this, one of the consequences of being an alcoholic is you don't hear shit. You don't hear shit. See, no matter what I say here tonight, I'm going to tell you something. There are some people that are going to pick up on like one or two things I say. And they're going to be different things. You know, because I've been doing this for years and I know how it works. One person comes up to me and says, man, you really helped me when you said this. And another person comes up to me and says, you really helped me when you said that. Another person will come up to me and say, you really helped me when you said this. And they'll talk about three different things, and two out of three of them won't even get it right. You understand what I'm saying? And one guy will walk out of here and say, that guy's full of shit, I didn't hear a thing. You know what I mean? So I understand. Do you understand? Listen, when you sponsor hundreds of people and you work with alcoholics, you understand that they ain't listening. Or you think they're listening, but they're not listening. You know why? Because it's hard to listen when you are having a conversation with 80 people in your mind at the same time about what you're going to say next and how this guy doesn't. There's like conversations going on, you see there. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about, what I'm going to say next, that's not right. You know, I mean, this. You know, I mean, you got that whole thing, contempt prior to investigation. There's so much junk going on in that brain. You're lucky if you hear anything at an AA meeting. You might hear one thing. You know what an AA mean? It's the bottom. My wife, the perfect example is my wife. And that's the same thing for reading. You can read this big book front cover to cover, and the only thing you'll see is acceptance is the answer to all my problems. And it's not. Acceptance is not the answer to all problems. Then we wouldn't have a big book. We'd have a small book. We wouldn't have a book. We'd have like a match cover. We'd have a bumper sticker or something. You know what I mean? Sometimes courage is the answer. Faith in God is always the answer. You know, it's like when my wife told me, when, you know, my wife, I had a beautiful wife, house, and everything like that, and she said, she looked at me and said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I think that's 12 words. You come home drunk one more time, I am leaving you. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward, pretty easy to understand, you know. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I get in my car, I drive, you know, a mile away, I stop at the first light, and I say to myself, what the hell does she mean by that? And I have no idea, I didn't know what she was talking about. Well, that you gotta understand, alcoholics read things in this book, and they read line by line by line, and they'll read 10 lines, and they'll only see one. And that one line they'll see, they misunderstand that. Because we're defiant, we have our own way of thinking, we know what we want, and how we want to do it, and we want to do it our way. And even the best alcoholic that's beating down, you know, some of the stuff they're asking you doing this is really kind of hard to take. Because it's opposite to the way I actually want to live, you know, the way I'm comfortable living. So I want to read a couple of things, and then I'm going to talk about stuff that'll probably disturb some people, which is good. You know, it's, hey, listen, if I'm not pissing off 25% of the people in here, I figure I'm not saying anything, you know? And, okay, so here we are. Now, I got this brand new big book somebody gave me. This is like a first edition deal. So it's kind of big and it's hard to turn. So this is on page, this book. This is on page 166 in Alcoholics Anonymous in Vision for You. You all remember Vision for You? And it says this in Vision for You. Now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment. Now, it doesn't say how long he's been sober. Doesn't say whether he's a newcomer. The guy could have 20 years. The guy could have 30 years. It says, being dry at the moment says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better. I work better. I'm having a better time. That sounds pretty good, right? Now, this is why Alcoholics Anonymous is so strange. They say stuff that doesn't make any sense. And sometimes it doesn't make any sense at all. I don't know, half this stuff didn't make any sense to me until I was 10 years sober. Because what happened is I started experiencing things in my life that I'd never experienced before, and then the things that they were talking about made sense because it fit within my reality. You see, I figure when a guy comes up to me and says, I feel better, work better, I don't miss it at all, I'll never drink again. You know what I figure? I figure that guy's like cured. He's on the road to recovery. He's like a superstar. He's going to do this thing. That's what you think. Until you start sponsoring people. And until the guy comes up to you and says, don't even worry about me, I ain't never gonna drink again, and he gets drunk the next day. Until you start seeing that every single person that tells you not to worry about them because they're not gonna drink again, drinks. Now let's just say, you know, that you were a guy and you sponsor people and you work with people. And let's say you sponsored hundreds of men. And let's say, every once in a while, a guy would come up to you and say, don't even worry about me. I ain't never going to drink again. And let's say within a week that guy was drunk, or within a month that guy was drunk. The guy was so sure he was never going to drink again. Let's say that happened like 50 times, 100 times. Now you're like 10 years sober, okay? And a guy comes up to you and says, will you sponsor me? And you say, sure. And he says, listen, I want you to tell you, you don't even have to worry about me because I ain't never going to drink again. You understand what I'm saying? You might write this shit in the book. You might write what I'm about to read to you in the book. And you might start realizing that even though, you know, in A, when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said and done. You might start realizing that the guy who is cocksure that he ain't never going to drink again because he's got this thing down, that's the guy in the biggest trouble who hasn't figured this thing out yet. Because this has to do with powerlessness. And if you haven't figured out powerlessness yet, you're in big trouble down the road. And most people don't even know what powerlessness means and can't really accept this. And powerlessness doesn't sound like, don't worry, I'm never going to drink again. I used to do that all the time before I came to AA. I used to say, I'm not going to drink today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was drunk. I'd say, I'm not going to have a drink. I'm not going to go to the bar today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was in the bar. I'd say it with sincerity. I'd really mean it. You know, when I told my ex-wife things like, I'm putting the check in the mail today, you know, for the child support, I really meant it. You know, it just didn't happen. I mean, alcoholics say a lot of things, you know, that they really mean, that they really intend, that they were really going to do it, and somehow it never happens. And what I started realizing that is the guys that were telling me that they're never going to drink again, not to worry about them, were always getting drunk. And the guys who were saying that were worried about drinking again, because they felt that they were in jeopardy of drinking again to a certain extent, because they felt somehow, some way, a sense of powerlessness over drinking, so that they had to go to meetings, they had to talk to me, Because in the back of their mind, they were still worried about this disease, and they realized that somehow they had some, no, they would never be caught dead saying, I ain't never going to drink again. Doesn't matter, they would worry if they said that, they were going to be cursed or hit by, you know, the guys who were feeling and acting like that, who didn't talk like that, those are the guys that stayed sober for a long period of time. Those are the guys that stayed sober for a long period of time. So this is what it says. But if you're new and you hear something like this, you think, what are they talking about? The guy's saying he's not going to, he's saying he's got it. It says, now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better, I work better, I'm having a better time. I sponsored a guy who was sober for about a couple of months. Not a couple of months, he was sober for about 8 months, 8 or 9 months. And he went on vacation to Jackson Hole, Montana, or whatever that is, wherever Jackson Hole is. Wyoming. Okay, one of those states. And he came back with his family. I called him up and I said, hey, Joe, you're back? He says, yeah, I'm back. He says, listen, why don't we go to a meeting tonight? Why don't we go to a meeting tonight? And he said, you know, Russ, I'm like in the middle of something busy. I said, hey, Joe, listen, you haven't been to a meeting in like 3 weeks. I said, why don't we go to a meeting tonight? He said, Russell, he says, don't even worry about me. I'm not even thinking about drinking. Drinking is the farthest thing from my mind. I ain't going to drink. I'm fine. By 5 o'clock that day, he was drunk. Let me tell you about this deal. Let me tell you about this disease. This disease is a disease that you don't realize that you want to drink until, you ready for this? After you take the first drink. That's when you realize that you're drinking. After, not before. You know, it doesn't. It's not like here I come to drink. It's like you're drinking and then you realize you're drinking. Somehow somebody, the waiter passes, something happens, and you end up, that's how insidious the disease is. So here's what it says. It says this. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better, I work better, I'm having a better time. As ex-alcoholics, we smile at such Sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again. Now listen to this, here's the line. For he is not happy about his sobriety. He is not happy. I mean, the guy's saying, I feel better, work better, I'm having a better time. And these guys are smiling, saying, this guy ain't happy. I mean, how do you figure that out? A guy's looking at you, telling him he's doing okay, he feels better, he's looking better, and they're smiling at him, saying, we know he's not happy with his sobriety. I don't know how to explain that to you. You're just going to have to be through that. You're going to have to go through that deal and sponsor some people and understand how insidious this disease is. He's not happy with their sobriety. Of course, in the beginning of the book, it says in the foreword to the first edition, it says this great line, if I can find it in this new book I have here. It says, many do not comprehend. We've got a bunch of alcoholics here. About 300 alcoholics in this room. Okay. Now listen, here's the deal. Now this isn't me, don't get all upset at me. I'm just the deliverer of the bad news, okay? Or the good news, depending on how you look at it. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. Do you know that alcoholism is a very serious disease? So let me tell you a little bit about a friend of mine. So that being said, I'm gonna tell you tonight the answer. Tonight I'm telling you the answer. I'm going to tell you the answer to this deal. You know, the answer to the problem. Whatever your problem is, I'm giving you the answer. You're going to get the answer. I'm not only going to give you the answer. I'm not only going to read you the answer. It's going to be scriptural because it's going to be right from the big book. I'm going to even point, you're not even going to have to guess at it. I'm going to say, this is the answer. It's going to be like four lines. You know what I mean? You can read the big book 17 times. You can go to 2,000 meetings. I'm going to give you the answer in four or five lines. That's the answer to the whole thing, the entire answer to the whole thing. There's only one thing you have to know. Once you know that one thing, you're golden. The steps are all about that. Everything you're reading in the book, everything you're doing is about this deal. I'm going to give you the answer. And most of you aren't even going to hear it. You'll hear it, but you won't believe it. Some of you one day will have 20 or 25 years sobriety, and you'll be standing in front of a group of people, and you'll say, I'm about to give you the answer. and you're going to give them the answer. And they're going to look at you with a blank stare, and they're not going to believe it either. Because you may hear something, but you have to have the ears to hear it. So I'll point it out to you. And for you guys who have the 25 years or the 30 years, you know, down the road, you know, you remember, you know, that maybe you remember this talk. You'll say, well, that guy wasn't so crazy, okay? Isn't that a cool deal where you come here, you're trying to figure this thing out, and some guy's giving the answer? And of course, you know, Bill Wilson said the next frontier is emotional sobriety. He says the real problem with alcoholics is, you see what he says? He says the real problem is unhealthy dependencies. He says that's what our real problem is. Unhealthy dependencies, depending on unhealthy things, things that are unhealthy for us. Or maybe a healthy things, but you know, in an unhealthy way. See, some of you guys still think if you only had a gal or you only got laid or something like that, that would be the answer to your problems, right? Some of you girls think if you only were married or you weren't alone or you had a man, that would be the answer to your problems. Don't you remember, you know, I know that's what you think because that's why they have all these bars with ladies' nights and everything like that, and because that's what people think. You remember you were doing that thing? That wasn't the answer, was it? It was the answer maybe for a few hours or something, but you tried that answer, right? Some of you guys think if you had a job, that'd be the answer, right? You know, if you only had a job, you'd be the answer. You know, with having a job, I mean, it's good to have a job, but you know, that's just another set of problems. Some of you guys, yeah, you'd just be bitching about your boss. You'd just be at a discussion meeting bitching about your boss down the road, you know what I mean? Some of you guys think if you only had a car, that'd be the answer. Some of you guys think, you know, if I could lose 50 pounds, that would be the answer for me. You know, some of you gals think if I could only, you know, had a different body shape, or, you know, you got all sorts of answers, and people run around the planet looking for all sorts of answers. You turn on the TV, you turn on the movie, you look at the billboards, they're giving you all these answers. Macy's is giving you the answer to your problems. You're going in deeper and deeper into debt, buying shit you don't even need, with money you don't even have, to impress people you don't even like, you know what I mean? You know, you figure, you know, if only this person liked you or that person liked you. You got all these problems in your mind that you're worried about, you're sucking your thumb about, you're going to discussion meetings about, that you're sure if you would clear up these problems, that would be the answer. And a lot of you guys cleared up some of these problems and they were just crowded out by more problems. You're trying to solve those more problems because you figure that's the answer. And you can't understand why, you know, you're trying so hard to fix your life so that you'll be okay, so you'll be happy with your sobriety, and you never can quite get it together. It's like nailing spaghetti to the wall. No matter how hard you try to nail it together, you still got to go to these meetings, you still got to do the stuff, it takes a lot of energy just to be almost okay and not blow your brains out. And make believe that you're doing okay and that you're happy, you know what I mean? You're just doing that deal, you know? You're just trudging that road. You're just hanging in there. You're just sort of hanging. You're not rocketed into this fourth dimension of existence, which you're not even doing. You're not experiencing much of heaven. You're not having remarkable things happen to you. You're not losing fear of today, yesterday, today, tomorrow, or being reborn. You don't have to see that God thing working in your life. Once in a while you do, but basically what you're mostly worried about is the bills and the car and the deal and whatever it is, and you come in here and you get entertained for about an hour or so maybe or something like that, and you go outside and you're back in the thick of it again. You know what I mean? Because you're really focusing on all that other stuff. Because you think all that other stuff is because you're dependent upon that stuff. That's the stuff you're thinking about, that if you could only get that stuff, or forget about if you get that stuff, you have that stuff, if you only could hang on to it so you don't lose that stuff. What's going to happen if you lose that stuff? What happens if you lose that house? What if happened if you don't get that stuff? You know, I mean, man, I'll tell you, what could I do? What could I do? If I could only clear your mind of that shit. The stuff that they talk about in the sixth step where you separate the men from the boys. You know, they talk about in the big book, they talk about separating the men. You know, they say there's a separation, the 12 and 12. It says this is a step that separates the men from the boys. And you know what they say the separation is? They either say the separation, he says, the men are the ones that are focused, laser beam focused on growing in the image and likeness of their creator. They're not focused on the car, they're not focused on the gal. They're focused on obtaining and growing in the image and likeness of their creator. Sounds a little religious, right? Sounds a little biblical, all kinds of little stuff. So that sort of turns you off. I know that turns you off. You know why it turns you off? Because it turned me off. Because it turns most people I sponsor off. And because the big book says in chapter 8, agnostic, is that when people talk like that, you understand what I'm saying? It turns alcoholics off. It says the hackles and the necks raise, they get mad, they get angry. That's what it says. And you know what it also says in chapter 8, agnostics? It says this kind of thinking has to be abandoned. Later on, in the third step, it says you got to turn your will and your life over to him. It says all sorts of stuff like that. It all talks about God. It talks about focusing totally on God. That's what the book is all about. That's what the book, you can do the steps and the cows come home. Until you get that deal down, you're not going to be happy with your sobriety. You're not going to be happy with this world. You're not going to be happy on this planet. That's the deal. So in any event, let me read a couple of things here. And he's not happy. Let me read a couple of things on this deal. It said, you know, it says, so why would, you know, why would between 1935 and 1939 be even important in this deal? Well, you know, you guys read the big book? Do you at least read the big book? Well, forget about whether you read it or not. Do you go to meetings, right? You were just at this meeting, right? Did they read at this meeting the that thing, Rarely Have We Seen?
Yes.
Okay, rarely have a senior person failed who has what?
Thoroughly.
What?
Thoroughly.
Thoroughly followed our path. Isn't that what they say? So they wrote that in 1939, right? So these guys got together and said, if you do thoroughly, which means meticulously, exactly, what we do, you'll get what we got, right? Right? That's what you think, right? Isn't that what it says? I mean, am I wrong? Tell me. I mean, I study English language. It doesn't say, does it say, rarely have we seen a person fail who, you know, sort of does kind of like what we do? Does it say, rarely have we seen a person fail who sort of like does what they want to do what we do, but don't like what they don't like what we do, and, you know, sort of like take what you like and leave the rest kind of shit, you know what I mean, that they say in the fellowship now, just take what you like and leave the rest. Don't worry about it thoroughly. Then just take what you like and leave the rest. And I'm not saying that's wrong. For newcomers to get them in, you might have to say stuff like that. You can't take this thing. But they don't say that, do they? They say, they keep on, every meeting you go to, they say, rarely have you we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Isn't that what they say? In the hopes that somewhere around, if you happen to stay sober for 20 years, somewhere around your 20th year, you'll focus on the word thoroughly. You'll actually see the word. You see, you'll go to meetings for 10, 15 years, you won't even see the word thoroughly. You'll go to your sponsor and you'll complain about all the crap you're going through. You'll complain about when is it going to get better. You'll complain about why is it you're still having problems. Why is it still happening to me? I've been going to meetings for 10 years. You'll complain, you'll whine, you'll cry. And then and your sponsor will try to guide you in the right direction. He'll try to tell you what's going on. He'll try to tell you you need to do more and stuff like that. And you'll just keep on complaining, complaining. And then one day, if you don't drink, and you really want to do this thing, you'll finally surrender more, and all of a sudden, one day, you'll see the word thoroughly. You'll be about 20 years sober, and you'll see the word thoroughly, and you realize there's a bunch of crap, there's a bunch of old ideas that you have that are holding you back that you refuse to give up. And by the way, if you don't get rid of all the old ideas, you know what the result is?
Nil.
It's like zero, nothing, unless you let go. You ready for this? Absolutely. Not a little bit, not close enough for government work. You know what I mean? I'm talking about absolutely. This is a pretty serious deal. These guys are fanatics. These guys are pretty wild. You know, these are the guys that in order to get into the meeting, you got to get down on your knees and give your life to God. Did you know that? They wouldn't even let you into the meetings. These were serious guys. So you read before every meeting, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, and thoroughly what they thought was thoroughly. I don't know, it was one of these things like, come on in, take what you like and leave the rest. It was like, you want to go to the meetings? Get down on your knees in front of the 10 guys, say the prayer, or else you're not coming in. There was no like choice. There was no like easy does it in that sense. That was the rule. There wasn't like one of these things, I'm holding up a white chip. If you want to take it, it's okay. If you're shy, I'll put it here in the corner and you can sneak up at 3 o'clock in the morning. None of that shit, you know what I mean? It was like the real deal. So listen, here's the deal. So you're now in AA in the year, you know, 2014. And you probably think that the way they do AA now and the way we do AA now, and I'm not putting it down, I sort of like the big funnel where people come in here and they say, I'm not going to believe in God, I'm not going to believe in this, you do your program, I'll do my program, there's 17,000 different programs, you know what I mean? God is a purple onion, you know, whatever the hell it is, I don't care, you know what I mean? There are probably a million different ways, you know, that you just do our own thing. And, you know, some people are staying sober for a short period of time because they learned in the 1950s that the truth of the matter is, and here's the absolute truth, and you know this is truth, is that you can come in here and you can stay sober just on the fellowship, just faking it, you know what I mean? Just having coffee instead of beer and developing a few friends, maybe you know, doing a few 13-step things, getting laid a couple times, doing it, have a great old time, and maybe stay sober for 5 or 6 years before you drink again. I mean, the truth of the matter is you can actually clown around in here and not really do this stuff and not really give up anything and still stay sober for 10 years and 20 years. You're just not going to get what they got. You're not going to get what they got. You understand what I'm saying? Hey, you might just stay sober for 20 years, 30 years, and then die sober, but you're living life of quiet desperation. 15 divorces and a banana, not really getting anywhere, somehow having a failed life, but, you know, hell, they gave you a 30-year medallion. You know what I mean? I mean, it's really what you want. It's your life, you know? This is, you know, this ain't a dress rehearsal. This is the real deal. So in any event, so if they say that before every meeting, rarely have I seen the person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. If that's really what they say, and they wrote that in 1939, then you might be interested in reading a book that tells you exactly what the path was. You see? You might be. You understand? Anybody understand the logic in that? If they say, do what we did, and I got a book here that tells you exactly what they did, because they weren't reading this book. They're reading other books. So let me read you something here. Then I'm going to go on to something else. And then I'm going to come back again. Okay, Bob. This is on page 96. Bob, noting that there were no 12 steps at the time, and that our stories didn't amount to anything to speak of, this is Dr. Bob, later said they were convinced that the answer to their problems was in the good book. You know what that is? The Bible. That's what they're reading, the Bible. You don't have that picture around here? Where is it, in the bathroom of the Alcoholics Anonymous, something for the guy in the bed?
It's in the hallway.
It's in the hallway, okay. The guy, when you go walk down here, you'll see the guy in the bed, they were holding the Bible, and that's how they did it. Now listen to this, this is what it says. To some of the older ones, that's the, what are they called, the old timers, at that time, between 1935 and 1939, the parts we found absolutely essential. Does anybody know what the word essential means? It means essential. It means essential. It's essential. Like in order to drive your car, it is essential you have gasoline. You get that? Right? We agree on that? Essential means like absolutely means essential. And they say to some of the old ones that we found these absolutely essential. Like if essential means essential, absolutely essential means whatever more than essential means. Am I making any sense here, you know? To some of the older ones, the parts of the book that we found which were absolutely essential were Sermon on the Mount, that's Matthew 5, 6, and 7, because that's what they were reading, studying, and praying over, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and the book of James. Book of James, the entire book of James. We were almost called the James Club. Now those are the books that between 1935 and 1939 they said were absolutely essential. They say, really have seen a person fail, has thoroughly followed our path. So, now you don't have to raise your hands. How many of you guys have been studying those books? Okay, a few of you guys have been studying. So if you guys haven't been studying those books, where's that thoroughly shit? Where's the thoroughly shit? Where's the thoroughly stuff? I'll tell you what, it's even gotten worse than that. I'll tell you how bad it's gotten. It's gotten so bad that it's a dirty word in AA to even mention the Bible. Unless you got 35 years and you figure they can't fire you anymore, you know what I mean? 33 years. It's gotten to the point where religion is bad. I'm spiritual, not religious. Where the Bible is bad, where clergy is bad, where it's all bad, I'm just going to do it my way. You know, in that alcoholic urge to not be told to do anything and to have total control and power over the God thing. And you know, they say, first of all, we had to quit playing God. That's the one thing we had to quit playing God. This is a serious disease. I sponsored a guy named Kevin once. I'm gonna read just two more things, but I wanna tell you about Kevin. I don't know why, I just feel compelled to talk about Kevin. I was thinking about him all day today, and I wanna talk about him, but first I wanna find something here. If I could find it. One of the first guys I sponsored was a guy named Kevin. I love Kevin. I really just fell in love with him. I fell in love with a lot of guys I sponsor, whether they make it or they don't. They're difficult. Kevin and I sponsored him for years. He would get 3 years and then drink. He would get 5 years and then drink. Kevin was one of these guys, he was just lovable. I mean, he was just a lovable rascal. He was a rascal. A lovable rascal. And he lived with us for 6 months in my house with my wife and kids. We just loved him. He would sit outside chain smoking cigarettes, you know what I mean? I'd take him to restaurants and I'd say, have some dinner. He'd say, no, I'll just have some coffee and a cigarette. You know, I said, no, eat dinner. You know what I mean? And you learn, I can't tell you how much you learn by sponsoring people. You learn about this disease, you learn about yourself, you learn about, well, Kevin died. He finally got about 5 years sober, 5 or 6 years sober. He came up here, started sponsoring a lot of people. Got very sort of gung-ho, and then he died in his sleep at a young age. He was probably in his 50s. And everybody loved Kevin. He's a great guy. There may be some people in here who even know Kevin. His son, grandson are still alive. And he was just a great guy, and I loved him. Kevin had a little problem. Every time Kevin drank, he got arrested. I don't know what it was. He drank, and a bells went off at the Metro Dade Police Department, okay? He was so much fun to sponsor, even when he was drinking, because it was just amazing. I remember one time he was working for Xerox. He would sell copiers. He was the kind of guy that could get drunk, get thrown into jail, get thrown into prison. He'd come out, he'd suit up, he'd look good, and he'd get a job with IBM. You know what I mean? And he'd sell $100,000 worth of equipment. He was a salesman, you know? And I remember one time he got a job. One time he got a job. He sold like $100,000 worth of equipment. He was supposed to get a $10,000, you know, what, he had about 6 months, he was supposed to get a $10,000 check or something like that, and they screwed him or something. I don't know what it is. He didn't get the check, and I saw him at the car room, and he said, they screwed me. They screwed me out of the check. They're not going to give me the check. I said, Kevin, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know whether they screwed you or not, and I don't care whether they screwed you or not, but I got to tell you this. Unless you lose that attitude, you're going to be drunk by this afternoon. He says, bullshit, I'm not going to be drunk. It's never going to happen. Don't worry about it. And by 5 o'clock, he was calling me from Dade County Jail. You know, that was it. And that was Kevin. So I'm going to try to close this thing up in about 5 or 6 minutes. So in any event, so one day he had been released from Avon Park. Anybody knows what Avon Park is? In one of his sojourns, he had been up there for 3 or 4 months. And he was sort of released from Avon Park. He was sort of kicked out because apparently there's a rule, no fraternizing with the ladies. And he was always one of these guys. He always picked ladies. They were always from AA, and they always liked knives. I don't understand how that happened. He had one gal, you know, and he was on the phone with me one day, and he was talking to me on the phone, and all of a sudden the phone went dead. I said, what happened? She said, she cut the wire. You know what I mean? I said, you know, I mean, I love these gals. They're fantastic. But, you know, I mean, let me tell you, you know, some problems there. So anyway, so I told him, I said, you know, when they start bringing out the sharp instruments, you got to leave. You know? So he fraternized with some gal named Annie, and they left Avon Park, and he was supposed to meet one night in Tampa. We're going out to Burns Steakhouse. You know, he had about 4 or 5 months, and he called me up on the phone, and he said, I said, Kevin, where are you? You're late. Where are you? And he says, Russell, he says, you wouldn't believe it. He says, Annie is on the stairs, nude, with a butcher knife. And I might have told you this story, and she says she's going to kill me and kill herself. And I said, what is she saying? She's saying she's screaming at me to leave. And I said, Kevin, I need you to listen to me. He says, what? He says, you need to leave. At which point, Kevin said the words that all alcoholics say when you tell them to do the thing that they absolutely have to do. They say, which drives people into Al-Anon when they say it, he said, you don't understand. See, I'm the crazy one now with like 15 years of, I'm crazy. I said, Kevin, you gotta, what is she saying? He says, she's screaming at the top of her lungs hysterically to leave. I said, Kevin, you need to leave. He says, I can't. Apparently he's being held by, you know, the Enterprise, USS Enterprise tractor beam, you know what I mean? He says, I can't. What'll happen? What will she do? So I go back and forth, leave, I can't, I leave, I can't understand. Well, you know the end of that story. He gets drunk, they both get drunk, and the cops come, and he gets arrested, and that's the end of that. Now listen to me. When he told me, when I told him that thing that was clear to you guys right now, I mean, so the guy that has two days in the audience, 2 days sobriety, he's even saying the son of a bitch should have left. You know what I mean? It is clear to you that he should have left, right? He was crazy not to leave. When I told, and his sponsors told him to leave, and when I told, now listen, it's clear to you, right? And when I told him to leave, he had 4 months sobriety. He was 4 months sober. And he couldn't leave. That's the disease you suffer from. That's the disease you suffer from. You suffer from a disease. You suffer from the same disease, and I suffer from the same disease that Kevin was suffering from that night. It doesn't matter that you're sober physically. It don't matter. One day, you're gonna be, it's gonna be clear that you gotta do something, or you're gonna die, or blow up, or something's gonna happen, and you're not even gonna understand the words that are being said, and even if you understand them, you're gonna say, you don't understand, I can't. And the next thing, you're gonna be drunk, or something's gonna happen, or you're gonna be in jail. That's the disease you suffer from, even as you're saying to me, no, that's not me, I would know. I would know not to. That's what you're dealing with this deal. So let me read you two things and then we're going to leave. I'm going to read you these two things. So here's the problem. Here's the answer. Here's, I told you I'd tell you what the answer is, okay? Here's the answer. The answer is on page 180, at least of this first edition. This is what this deal is all about. See, it's all about selfishness, self-centeredness, compulsiveness, being driven. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. You know what the problem with Kevin was? He was driven. He was driven by 100 foot. He was driven. You think you're like in control. You think when you run after the gals or run after the guys or look at the TV or look at this or buy that or do that, you think you're like making decisions. You think you have like free will. You can't not do the stuff that you do that's detrimental to your stuff. The overspending, the overthinking, the over whatever it is that's causing you problems. You're not even doing it because you want it. You're doing it because you can't help yourself from doing it. You can't stop from doing it. You're like on an automatic pilot. You wouldn't know how to live a life without doing it. You're always, listen, alcohol drinking is a symptom of this disease. There's a lot of symptoms of this disease besides drinking alcohol. You know what I mean? The inability to sit in a meeting for more than an hour. The inability to sit in a meeting for more than an hour and listen is a symptom of this disease. That's the truth, believe it or not. The inability to turn off a cell phone while a meeting is going on is a symptom. There's a lot of symptoms that'll keep you sick in this deal. Here's the answer. So what's the answer? Here's the answer. They say selfishness, we got to get rid of it. God makes that possible. The whole book talks about God. See, a relationship with him is right. Great. Here's the answer on page 80. Perhaps there is a better way. Have you ever heard this one? Perhaps there is a better way? We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? That's the answer. That's what the whole book, that's the answer. To the extent that you adopt that and understand that and focus on him, that's what the whole book, that's why it says once you make this decision, when we make this decision, being all powerful, he gives us everything we need. We stay close to him and perform his works well. We lose concern for our little plans and designs. We start having concerns for other people. We're transformed. You know, we start having a consciousness. You know, we lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We are reborn. This is big book stuff. See, the relationship with him is right. Great events will come fast for you and countless others. Page 81, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate to us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fears and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. The whole thing is steps to bring you to the 11th step so you're on your knees focusing on God. You don't have to like it. As a matter of fact, if you're alcoholics, you probably don't like it. You probably say, this guy's full of shit. I'm just reading your stuff out of the book. This doesn't stuff. You know where they got this stuff from? Where do you think they got this stuff from? Like, this is the last thing. I'll tell you where they got this from. They got this from a book called the Book of James. Remember that Book of James? They said, these are the books. It came out of the Book of James. This is the book, because I know most of you probably won't read it. I'm going to read you about James. This is the Book of James. When all kinds of trials, anybody here have trials, temptations, problems, stuff going on in their lives? Okay. When all kinds of trials, you ever go to a discussion meeting and complain about your problems? Anybody ever go to a trust guy? You ever worry about your problems? You ever complain to your sponsor about your problems? When all kinds of trials and temptations crowd into your lives, don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends. Rejoice in your troubles. Let the process go on until that endurance is fully developed, and you will find that you have become men of mature and women of mature character with the right sort of independence. And if in the process any of you does not know how to meet any particular problem, he has only to ask God, who gives generously to all men without making them feel foolish or guilty, and he may be quite sure that the necessary wisdom will be given him. But he must ask, now listen to this, listen to this, this is important. He must ask in sincere faith without secret doubts as to whether he really wants God's help or not. The man who trusts God but with inward reservations, one eye on God, one eye on the gal. That's what Kevin's problem was. He had one eye on God, and he had one eye on Annie. You know, we have some Kevins in here tonight. I know some of them. We got some Kevins. You know, we got some Annies in here tonight. You know? We got some Annies, we got some Kevins, you know? You're sort of liking this God thing, maybe or not, but you're really looking at the car, you're looking at the deal, you know? He must ask in sincere faith without secret doubts as to whether he really wants God's help. The man who trusts God, but with inward reservations, is like the wave of the sea, carried forward by the wind one moment and driven back the next. That sort of man, now listen to this, that sort of man cannot hope to receive anything from God, and the life of a man of divided loyalty will reveal instability at every turn. You know? The result is nil unless you let go. Absolutely, that's where they got this stuff from. Unless you let go. This stuff has been around for thousands of years. I like the way they say it in the New King James. It says, he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from God. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. A double-minded life. You know what a double-minded life looks like? You're not sure what to do. Should you do this? Should you do this? Should you do that? You're always second-guessing yourself. You're always worried. What's going to happen here? What's going to happen there? You got like two minds going on. One guy told me, he said, I think you have a split personality. I said, I wish I could get down to two. You know what I mean? You know what it is to live a double-minded, unsure, unstable, crazy sort of life. Never really sure where you stand. Never really having balance. Never even sure what's going to happen the next day or the next day. Always worried about that. Always worried about what happened yesterday and where that's going to lead. Never wanted to make a decision, or whether you're making the right decision or the wrong decision. Run around with checking 15 different people and a carrot, you know, to see what's going on. Not having any clear feeling that you're steady and you're secure in your knowledge and what's going on. You know what that life feels like? It feels horrible. Because I was into that thing for 10, 15 years, sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Trudging that road, you know? You want to get involved in the new freedom, you want to get involved in the new happiness, you want to get away from the double-minded life. You want to not be the double-minded man, the double-minded woman. You know, you see, if Kevin wasn't the double-minded man, you want to know something? We wouldn't have even had that conversation. You know why? You know why? Because he wouldn't have been in that room. Because you know why? He wouldn't have been with that gal. You know why? Because he wouldn't have even been drinking. He wouldn't be in Avon Park. You know why? Because it wouldn't even matter whether he got the check from Xerox or not. Or were they screwed him out of it? You know why? Because he wouldn't be looking at the check. He would be looking at God. He would have never, he'd be sober now for, you know, 30 years. And he'd still be alive. You know why? Because he could never take his eyes off the world. He could never stop loving the things of this world and be intoxicated by the things of this world. Now, I'm not saying this stuff is popular in AA. It's not. I understand why it's not popular. When you're hooked on any drug, and this world is a drug, when you're hooked on any drug, you don't really like somebody who says you got to give up the drug. You don't appreciate somebody. I mean, you go from preaching to meddling. You don't like people that tell you got to give up the drug. You guys figure, I gave up the alcohol, that's enough. Yeah, it's enough for AA standards, the way we do it today. You understand what I'm saying? You pick up your medallion, they'll all clap for you, but when you get home, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you feel lonely, you feel disconnected, and you feel, when is this going to start working for me? And you don't understand why, because you think you're doing everything. Just realize you're not really doing this thing thoroughly. You're not doing what they were doing. That's the deal. God bless you. Thank you.